us.
That's all right, Nate.
Mallory Pipey text line 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the show? Text me. Coming up here in about an hour, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Stay tuned for that. But joining us now, he represents the 6th Congressional District here in Alabama, Birmingham area. Congressman Gary Palmer is with us on the line. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Jeff.
Hey, thank you for making time and thank you for coming on. I know it's been kind of a crazy, especially with Alabama and the president coming to Tuscaloosa last week. But let's start here. First 100 days, your assessment.
I think it's been good. I think it's been rocky for some people, and particularly with the tariffs. But it looks like that's working out too. And once again, I think President Trump's going to prove that he's right.
The tariffs are like, you know, and the markets have responded unfavorably or whatever. But it sounds like to me, Congressman, whatever you think of the tariffs, and we could debate the policy itself, but I once you start getting these trade deals in place, you start seeing some of these tariffs either get a little bit of relief to them, that things are going to swing in the other direction pretty fast.
Well, the markets have pretty much regained what they've lost. It's down a little bit today, but it's still back up over 41,000 on the Dow. And I think the jobs report for April was much, much better than people thought. We just got to see how this plays out. But the thing that people can't lose sight of is the existential threat to not only the United States, but to all of the West is China. And we've got a tremendous problem, not just in terms of trade imbalance with China, but in our dependency on China. And this forces a lot of companies and even some of our allies to rethink this whole supply chain issue. We've got to near source our supply chain. We've got to bring as much of it in to the United States as we can, and particularly when it comes to things that our economy and our national security depend on, like critical minerals, rare earth elements, and pharmaceutical ingredients.
I would think, and this is probably a point that people miss a lot, Congressman, is that it's not necessarily bring it all back to the United States, but at least get it out of China or any other hostile adversarial nation to the United States, that you could do this manufacturing, not necessarily in the United States, but maybe get it with people who are more aligned with our interest.
Yeah, I was in Guatemala in March, and actually visited Guatemala, El Salvador, Costa Rica, and Panama. Met with all four presidents. I led a congressional delegation down there. And in discussions with one of the presidents, I made this point to them that if we have collaborative private investment to help these nations build out their energy infrastructure, that would support manufacturing and heavy industry, things that we don't particularly like to do here, and be able to build a processing and major refinery for rare earth elements, the world would be the path to their door. And I think he got that. Our problem is that there's not a single major refinery for rare earth elements in the Western Hemisphere. There's only 9 in the world. 8 are in China. The other one's in Malaysia. It's a private company owned by a private company out of Australia. So this has become a national security issue for us. And you're exactly right, Jeff. We don't have to have all this here. But we do need to have it close enough to us that our supply chain wouldn't be interrupted. And that's what I've been working on for the last 3-plus years, is building a Western Hemisphere alliance as a soft power alternative to China.
Right. And the other part of it is, because China may see this coming, and they're trying to, Belt and Road, and they're trying to get, this is like the Panama Canal, and trying to get like an inside track there, where a lot of these places that could be an alternative to China, I would think. But I think even in these early days of the Trump administration in the second term, he's really, at least markets are really aware of this and trying to turn that in the other direction.
The very first overseas trip that Secretary Rubio made was to Guatemala, El Salvador, Costa Rica, and Panama. And about 4 weeks later, I led that delegation down to the same four countries. And about 3 weeks after that, Chairman Jason Smith, the Ways and Means Committee, led a delegation down. And between Secretary of Defense Hegseth and the SOCOM commander, Holsey, struck a deal with Panama. So the wheels are turning already. Things are in motion already to alleviate some of the very things that I think you and I both know we ought to be concerned about and that you've expressed concern about.
Well, and the other, I guess, component of this, once we start getting these trade deals in place, and then I think that maybe you could do something with interest rates later on, you know, the back and forth between Jerome Powell and the Trump administration. But if this is rock bottom, and I don't know that it is, but this is as bad as it gets economically, then Republicans ought to be in pretty good shape kind of going forward. Now, I don't know what that means to the midterms. A lot of things could change between now and then. But it was important, at least from my point of view, for Trump to get a lot of this done very, very early.
Yeah, and I think he learned a lot from his first term that you can't necessarily assume that the American people are going to let us hold the majorities. When we went into this, I told people we had basically 15 to 16 months to get things done if we had any hope of continuing in the majority. And I think the president understands that fully. The thing that we've got to try to do now is on these executive orders, we've got to introduce legislation and try to get as much of this codified as we can, because hopefully the next administration will be a Republican administration as well. But if through some unfortunate happening, it's not, the next administration can, with the stroke of a pen, overturn every one of the executive orders. So that's the what Congress needs to be doing once we get through this reconciliation package.
How does that look? You know, a lot of talk about that, and this reconciliation package, I think, is Speaker Johnson and others in leadership will tell you, I mean, this is a historic opportunity that's right before us.
Well, I wish I could be super, super positive about it. I will say this. I think we'll wind up passing something. I wish I could say that it's going to be outstanding and super good, but what I'm seeing right now, I don't think so. There's some opportunities to really fix some things that we've needed to be fixed for decades that I don't know that some of my colleagues have the will to do. That, I mean, Jeff, we could be saving close to $2 trillion. We could be cutting close to $2 trillion over the next 10 years if we had the will to do it. I just don't know if we do. I think what the president wants is to get the tax cuts renewed, which I think are critical to the economy. There needs to be certainty in regard to our tax policy, because you know as well as I do, that it's uncertainty that drives capital out of the marketplace, that drives down investment. So I think we'll wind up doing something along those lines. But the opportunity to fix some things that could have an enormous benefit for the country down the road, I just don't know that if I can rally enough of my colleagues to get some of these things done.
And then that's, I guess, my concern with this ever since he was sworn in, or even after he won the election last year. Look, we've determined that the media, I think, is a waning factor in, sort of public policy, right? They lost a presidential election and they threw everything they could at the president. But where they do seem, and I mean, it's more than the media, there's a whole sort of Democrat establishment behind it too. They are able to get in the heads of a lot of your Republican colleagues. You know, they read their own press clips. And the fear for me was always this, that they'd get a little wobbly, you know. As time goes on, there would be a controversy there'd be something, some reason to be hesitant about what President Trump was doing, and that was something that we needed to, you know, just a little caution here. But when you're dealing with something so marginal, so shallow as the Republican majority, small, you just don't have a lot of room for error, and they could make up for it marginally by getting in the heads of a lot of your Republican colleagues.
Well, I'll tell you what the real problem is when it comes to media up here, besides the left-wing lunatics that are in the media. It's that so many of my colleagues think Politico matters or The Hill matters. And a lot of your listeners probably don't even know what The Hill and Politico are. They don't read it. They listen to you. They watch their local media. But we're in a bubble up here, Jeff. And these guys think that if Politico says something bad about them or Politico's against a certain policy, that that's how the country thinks. That's not how the country thinks. If Politico or The Hill or any of these other media inside the Beltway media people were accurate about what the American people think, Kamala Harris would be president. We would be in the minority. And I just don't understand. I don't even talk to them. I mean, I'll walk by them and they'll stop me and say, Congressman, can we talk to you? And I'll just say no. I mean, they don't communicate with my constituency, and they certainly don't share my views on policy.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think that's just a point that you got to make over and over again. These guys, you can't let them dictate the terms of the narrative or whatever. You can't give them quotes for their hit pieces in general, because this is what they do. They set it up, and then they run something, definitely, especially Politico. This is clearly in this like DC bubble. They're writing for a DC audience, and it's not so much talking to them, Congressman, but it's just that people take them so seriously. And that's always disappointing. Like, well, did you see Politico today? Well, I mean, they may matter on The Hill to some degree, but broadly speaking, it's a cable news plus inside the Beltway phenomenon.
Yeah, they don't matter outside the Beltway. And, you know, what was the vote totals, Democrat versus Republican in D.C.?
90-1 or 90-10 or yeah, something ridiculous.
I don't think it's even 90. I don't even think it's 90-10. I think it's like 95-5, something ridiculous like that. And that's what drives me nuts about this place, is that we got guys up here that think it does, and it drives their decision making, and they don't grasp the opportunity to do something worthy of their time here, worthy to be remembered. They just do the least that they have to, so they can win the next election. I'm not very positive today, am I?
No, but, we could be in a much worse place. You could be sitting here today with President Kamala Harris and me asking you about, well, how are you guys going to slow this stuff down? You know, how are you going to slow down this this transition to socialism that we seem to be undergoing here? But, this discussion about Democrats, they may very well do okay in 2026. They may flip Congress. I think they got a hard Senate map if they want to overcome that. But they just don't have a wide, broad message that really meshes with the American public at large. It's alien in a mass sort of election setting where you have a national election that people care about, and they're going to do what they're going to do. And this always worries me about Republicans. Like, they need to be like keenly aware of this, that overall, unless you live in one of these swing districts, and there's very few of them left, you can't be beholden to either the D.C. crowd or the cocktail party circuit, but you certainly can't be beholden to the media because that stuff does matter. And this is that's like their last tool left, I think, because the far left and the sort of the movers and shakers in the Democratic Party, the people who go to Democratic National Conventions, congressmen, are not in the mainstream, and they have a hold on their party, and it's why you see all this sort of this crazy behavior getting highlighted. Like the trips to El Salvador and some of the things that are being said that it didn't work in 2024. It shouldn't work now, should it?
No. That again, their policies are on full display. Their philosophies are on full display. Everybody should see that. And what worries me sometimes is that my colleagues don't see it. They don't realize that the American people soundly rejected those things. They want us to do what's best for the country. You know, Donald Trump had the courage, and I'm not a big tariff guy. I think you know me well enough to know that from my think tank days. I'm not a big tariff guy. But Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, had enough courage to go out and do something that he knew would really be rocky for a little while. He was willing to take the risk to do that. I think he's done other things in the past that people kind of cringed, but it worked out. You can achieve greatness doing easy things, Jeff. And I think that if there's ever been a time when the country needed a great president, needed a great Congress, it's right now.
Congressman, we'll leave it there. Well said. Let's talk again soon. And thanks for hopping on this morning.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff. I'll be more positive next time.
That's all right. Do what you got to do. Congressman Gary Palmer there. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.